Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Pet dogs go out of their way to comfort humans they sense are sick or depressed. And I'm sure all of us have experienced some of that. Also, today we'll look at why meat is dangerous. And from our environmental segment, too warm, too few fish, health warning for the world's oceans by Karen Cook from Climate News Network. Scientists warn of pharmaceuticals in our drinking water and our lakes and streams, our urban rivers, from University of Florida. The trouble is they can't flush any of that out. Also from a very orthodox doctor who says that vaccine mandates in the United States are doing more harm than good. And this is from the British Medical Journal, and this is from an orthodox doctor who's a big advocate of vaccines. Also, from those living in New York State, in every state where you're listening right now, what went on with Senate Bill 277 in California to mandate vaccines is now happening in New York. I'll tell you about the newest New York vaccine bill for this year and why you should oppose it and how many doses kids are going to be getting. Wow, 70. That's 70 different doses of vaccines. Also, we're going to be talking today about what is the truth behind all this pro-vaccine propaganda that we had a measles epidemic, and thank goodness for the measles vaccine. In fact, on the Progressive Commentary Hour this week, I had Dr. Barry Sears, who is very much a pro-vaccine pediatrician. I felt it was necessary to offer that perspective, the pro-vaccine perspective, since I was doing a program based upon the whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson's virtual statements that they covered up, lied, destroyed evidence about the dangers of vaccines. Well, he made a statement, and I let him make it, and then I said, well, you know, in point of fact, measles was gone by 98% before the first vaccine was ever invented. So to give all the credit to the vaccine is simply not scientifically accurate. We're going to go much further today in an in-depth understanding of measles, the new medical McCarthyism. Roman Bistrinic from Foreign Policy Journal. Also today, time permitting, why you can't trust the mainstream media about drugs and vaccines. Additionally, the GOP shocking attack on America's national forest, we'll be dealing with that. And we'll also take an in-depth look at how the oceans are rising, because one of the reports on the environment I'm doing today talks about how the oceans definitely are going to rise at least 3 feet. That's definite. Well, I believe they're totally wrong. Why do I say they're wrong? Because do you know how big Antarctica is? Well, it's bigger than the United States and Mexico combined, and it's melting. About 3 years ago, there was a movie, a very good movie, about ice. And what it showed was how we're losing our glaciers and how these large chunks of ice are breaking off or melting, and that's all fresh water. That's not in the ocean. And as a result, that's causing an increase. But then one day, they showed something that had never been seen before. A huge ice chunk breaking off. And it went 600 feet in the air when it rolled over. And it was the size of Manhattan. That has just never been seen before in history. And that's the new norm. Now, let's say that that, along with others behind it, are what are the backstop to keep the larger pieces of glacier from breaking off. Now you've got a volcano under Antarctica, and you've got the hottest weather in recorded history above Antarctica. So you've got melting on the top and melting on the bottom, but right in the middle of Antarctica, they're finding lakes, real lakes, that have been frozen in time for all these millennia. Now, what happens when the bottom or the top reaches those lakes? Huge amounts of water. Huge. We're talking about as much as in the Great Lakes suddenly can flow into the ocean. And then you have an uncontrollable increase in water. I believe that's going to happen in the near future because no one can accurately predict how fast these glaciers will start to calve and break, and then everything behind it based upon it being on a hill. Just imagine San Francisco. There's one hill in San Francisco, if you've ever been there. It's a wonderful hill to go up. And you walk up, and they've got this beautiful garden in the middle of the street and all these beautiful houses. And you go up, and then you can see out to the Golden Gate Bridge, and you can turn around and see downtown. And you wonder, wow, what would happen if anyone's brakes ever went out on them on this hill? There's just, you're going to have a really serious accident. Now just imagine that someone put some bricks under the tire. That's the only thing holding back the cars from going down like a 40-foot incline. Now think of something that is larger than any mass of ice in the world. And that is what Antarctica is. And those barrier backstops, like Larsen B ice shelf, those ice shelves, which were holding all that in place, they're cracking, melting, and floating out to the ocean. So now let's just imagine you took out the bricks in front of a person's tires that was on a hill and the brakes were not on. It is inevitable. It is absolute, is it incontrovertible that there is nothing, no power in the universe that can stop that from happening. It is going to happen. The question is when. And no one knows. But since they're wrong about everything all the time, consistently when it comes to environmental projections, I say better plan for the oceans rising a lot faster than what they're suggesting. This is just some things we're going to deal with today. We have a lot to share with you. I'm on the phone. May be able to switch over to a microphone at some point in the program. But we're going to have someone who can tell you about the sea levels rising, 10 meters, that's a lot. Also, what is addiction? A different perspective. And a place for my stuff with George Carlin. We have a packed hour. Now, all of us, at least the people listening to this audience, want to make sure that when you buy something, you're buying something that's healthy. And you want it to be clean when it goes into your body. Clean food, healthy food, whole food, clean body, healthy body, works that way. Hot dogs, french fries, no, it doesn't work that way. You're not getting the vital life force, you're not getting vitalism, aside from the fact you're getting denatured food that is dangerous and loaded with bacteria, viruses, and pro-inflammatory. So, we go to the market, and we got the farmer's market. It's fresh, that's good. It's not certified organic. That doesn't mean anything because that's a gimmick. I have been a certified organic farmer. Here's what it means. They come on your property. They examine your soil. They take a look in your shed. They want to see whether or not you're using fertilizer. If so, where does fertilizer come from? And they take a look at your seeds. Are these heirloom seeds that are organic or are they not? And the whole inspection doesn't take long, and they charge you for it. And then every year you can expect to get a bill for upwards of $5,000, even if it's your own little tiny backyard and you never take a single product to market. Well, that's just not going to work for most people that have little home gardens. But ask most don't use pesticides, first because it's expensive, and second because it's dangerous and they know it. They don't want that on their kids or themselves or their pets. So you find it at the market now. What can you do to make sure that you're eating as healthy as possible? Well, you can wash it. And according to Howard Garrett, known as the Dirt Doctor, he's compiled a number of uses for vinegar, including how to cleanse anything that comes out of a garden. Quote, vinegar is a wonderful organic tool that was discovered by accident 10,000 years ago when wine was accidentally allowed to ferment too long and turn sour. It can be made from many products, including beer, apples, berries, beets, corn, fruits, grains, honey, malt, maple syrup, melons, molasses, potatoes, rice, sorghum, and other foods containing natural sugars. Natural sugars from these foods produce ferment, and that ferment becomes alcohol, which is then fermented into vinegar. The product label will identify the starting ingredients such as apple cider vinegar or wine vinegar. Malt vinegar is made from the fermentation of barley malt and other cereal grains. Sugar vinegar is made from sugar or syrup or molasses. Well, white, spirited, or distilled vinegar is made by fermenting distilled alcohol. And distilled vinegar, white vinegar, is made from 190 proof alcohol that's fermented by adding sugar and living bacteria. Vinegar that is made from the petroleum derivative, 99% acetic acid, is not acceptable in the organic program. The name vinegar comes from the French word sour wine. But it's important to realize that not all vinegars are created equal. Some can benefit your health when taken internally. For example, on cleanses and detoxes, I give people 1 teaspoon of apple cider, organic apple cider vinegar in the morning with a teaspoon of Manuka honey and 2 tablespoons of ginger juice and the juice from 4 lemons, including the skin and seeds, diluted with some aloe vera, 2 ounces of whole leaf aloe vera that is completely pure. And then you put that into a 32 ounces, and you drink that throughout the morning. That is a great cleanser, great detoxifier. So there's a lot of things you can do to clean with vinegar. And apple cider vinegar is a great place to start. And when purchasing apple cider vinegar, you want to avoid the perfectly clear, sparkling, clean varieties you commonly see on grocery stores. Instead, you want the organic, unfiltered, unprocessed apple cider vinegar. Remember I mentioned yesterday, don't go for the oils that are clean. Always go for the murky, brown ones, because that means that they still have their polyphenols. Even if it looks like in the bottom they have kind of cobweb-like substances floating in it, that's good. That is called the mother. And it indicates your vinegar is good quality. So you want the debris, you want the discoloration, you want those little cobwebs. That's what you want, because that's all healthy for you. And apple cider vinegar, by the way, in other nations has been used to clean everything you can imagine, but it also helps diabetics. There are a lot of good studies in the scientific literature showing that vinegar can help lower your blood glucose levels. In fact, the American Diabetes Foundation, publication Diabetes Care, found that taking vinegar before meals significantly increased insulin sensitivity and dramatically reduced the insulin and glucose spikes that occur after a meal. So that's good. And also, we have what are called the cures. Now, this is an old folk concept. It goes way back, hundreds of years, where you take something because, well, it helps you overcome something. And historically, that ferment would help people overcome the bad bacteria in your gut, especially if you had been taking alcohol or sugar or meat. And by taking some apple cider vinegar 2-3 times a day with fresh water, it helped purge the system, and it helped with a lot of old ailments. In fact, there was a book written by a man named Jarvis called Folk Medicine. And in there, he talked about the folk cures, and he said that apple cider vinegar cures a lot of ailments. Well, candida, acid reflux, sore throats, lowering cholesterol, helping with acne, sinus infections. Yeah, it does. It does a lot of good. And also, if I find that my dogs have been running into the sand and rolling over and over and getting sand fleas on them, I simply give them a bath with a aloe vera shampoo, and then I give them a apple cider vinegar rinse. Same with cats and dogs and cats, even horses. I've done it with horses to get the fleas off their legs. and it helps also with arthritic conditions, controls fleas, repels flies, and gives a beautiful shine to their coats. In fact, I had a ranch, my first ranch down in Texas, I didn't realize how dilapidated everything was, but in a pasture behind an old barn that was just a wreck, there was a group of horses that had not been fed in a long time, and it was a mess. I mean, absolute total mess. And the horses couldn't even get up off the ground. I remember they, because not one of over 47 horses could even stand. Their skin was just hanging. They were so malnourished. So I went in there and I said, you're not going to euthanize anything. You know, I engaged in animal rescue and we're going to get these horses back. He said, it's not possible. I said, you're right. It's not possible coming as a vet. Let's see if I'm right. Well, 14 months later, every one of those horses was outstandingly healthy, full gained, healthier than they'd ever been, sanctuary where they could live out their lives in a beautiful, beautiful terrain and with loving people that almost all these sanctuaries have. But one of the ways that I kept them from being eaten by the fleas all day long was to take apple cider vinegar and spray it and wipe, spray and wipe. So you talk about getting the fleas off, especially around back around their backside where their tail is. That's where the fleas really congregate. Spray all that. And it's a natural flea repellent and a fly repellent as well. And by the way, when I've been in the jungles, down in the Brazil, for example, I sprayed my whole body. You stink, yeah, so what? And it's a little yucky. Rather have that than have mosquito bites, end up with malaria. Something for our campers in this audience to appreciate. So apple cider vinegar, you bet. It also helps correct the pH balance on the skin, and that's one thing you can do. But also you can put that in water. And when you put it in water and then you agitate your fruits and vegetables. Now, which fruits and vegetables do I believe you don't have to buy organic? Top of the list are avocados. I grow avocados. In fact, I have a huge avocado tree, and there's a photograph on my website of someone holding a three-pound avocado from that tree. In fact, it had just dropped. And They drop smaller, generally when they're about 3 or 4 ounces, dozens and dozens of them. And those are great as well. So in any case, the skin is so thick that it's a natural protector. And that's also true of gourds like breadfruit, squash, Hubbard squash, butternut squash, spaghetti squash, winter squash. The skins are so thick that they are virtually impervious to most creatures. So the whole idea that you should be paying a whole lot more to get organic when you can get them and then wash them in a bath. Now, you can do two ways of bath. You can use some hydrogen peroxide in equal amounts to apple cider vinegar, and you put it in, and you agitate it, wipe it down, rinse it, and it's good to go. Just something can help the people save money, because not every single item. Now, there are things that must be organic, and your leaf lettuces, herbs, yes. Microgreens, sprouts, yes. Ideally, the fruits that are heavily sprayed, grapes, apples, oranges, yes. Also, something involving our pets. There was an interesting article that I came across, and it immediately reminded me of something that happened about 15 years ago. And that was someone I knew was going through a really bad period of time in their life and were housebound, depressed, and they didn't know what to do. And I said, I'm going to send over to your place my little dog, Beautiful. Why? Because Beautiful can sense when there's anything wrong, any emotion out of place, and will be there to give you some unconditional love and a comfort. Well, sure enough, 2 days later, I get this call. I can't believe it. You know, the moment I start to get into a mood, she comes over and gets on my lap and looks at me. And then I feel so guilty about feeling bad that I want to cheer her up. And it's just wonderful. I'm feeling so much better. And she came out of that trough that sometimes people go through in life based upon conditions that happen in their life. That happened to be due to a loss of relationship, loss of a job, and other things that were important. And that's normal to be in kind of a mournful place because something is separating. You didn't intend it to. You weren't ready for the next chapter of your life. You're being forced into a new chapter of your life. And frequently, we're not prepared for the chapter we're about to enter. In other cultures, more so, because they spend a lot of time preparing you for each change in your life. In America, we don't prepare you for anything. We just figure you'll figure it out. Well, people don't. But a pet can make a difference, enormous difference. I'll quote this from this particular article. It says that dogs sense when people are dying. Hospice veterinarian Jessica Vogelsang recounts the stories of how her dogs helped her through various hard emotional times. She writes about how when she was struggling with postpartum depression following the birth of her first child and dealing with the stress of a new veterinary career, her golden retriever refused to leave her alone until she got the help she needed. Just after finishing writing a book, Vogelsang learned that her mother had a fatal and inoperable brain tumor. The parents moved in with her shortly after, and her dog, Brody, immediately began behaving differently. Rather than jumping on her mom, as he always had before, he became restrained and more attentive. Quote, he knew mom was sick. He was with her 24/7. He was trying not to be too obvious, but Dad was on one side and he was on the other. And then Brody began lying next to my mom's feet rather than anything else while all the hospice workers were around. So canines sense. And when they sense, they're there to help. One more reason where if you have a dog, you are blessed because they're blessed creatures. I'm Gary Nall. A few more things, then we're going to take a break. And one of the issues I want to discuss is the treatment of chronic disease has skyrocketed. How much so, according to this new release, it is now, this is for chronic care. This is the care that you live with day in and day out. Arthritis, $1 trillion a year. And yet we have quality of care that is below developed nations. We're dead last. So we're spending $1 trillion, with a T, trillion annually, on diabetes, heart disease, chronic illnesses, more than any other country in the world. And this is going to go up to $6 trillion a year because we have not planned ahead, and the majority of people are not making changes. They want changes, but they're not willing to make them. So it's a serious situation. How many people right now suffering from chronic care in the United States? 79 million and 26 million. You're dealing with over 100 million people just with diabetes alone, just diabetes. And just that costs $245 billion a year to combat it. And yet there's nothing that they're doing that's helping them. So here's the deal. Starting when I get back to New York, we're going to do some health support groups with people who have chronic conditions, provided that they have someone that comes with them from their family or friends that will help support the person so that when they start a protocol, they can stay on it. And that makes an enormous difference, having the right support system in place. Because otherwise, just our health care alone will bankrupt the United States and people. That's important. Now, on an upcoming program, I'm going to tell you why you shouldn't be drinking distilled water all the time, why those reverse osmosis distillers would not be my first choice. I'll give you a great insight into that. That's still to come. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll, speaking on the telephone today, on the road, finishing up some very important filming, and for a major filming that I'll be doing in the month of October, November, and December back in New York for a very important film. This will be the biggest, most significant film I've ever produced, and you'll see it within a year. But doing some of it as I can now. A few short issues, and then we'll go to, I'm going to ask my engineers in New York to get ready. Two people who just finished a retreat, I'd like for you to hear what they have to say happened to them during the retreat. And then we'll just play a little bit on the rising sea levels. But concerning the rising sea levels, this is from NASA. New research underway indicates that at least 3 feet of global sea rise is a near certain. NASA scientists said yesterday that's higher than the 1 to 3 feet rise the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change gave in its 2013 assessment. Sea levels have been rising 3 inches on average since 1992, with some areas experiencing as much as 9-inch rise. Quote, given what we know now about how the ocean expands as it warms and how ice sheets and glaciers are adding water to the seas, it's pretty certain we're locked into at least 3 foot of sea level rise, probably more, end quote. Yep. Remember, Greenland, that ice sheet, has contributed more greatly to sea level rise, losing an average of 303 gigatons of ice a year for the past decade. And Antarctica has lost 118 gigatons a year. But that's about to change because of the loop and the tipping when it goes out of control. And we're now right at, as we speak, we're within the next 1 to 2 years, we're at the out of control level. So you may go to sleep one night, and within the next 2 to 3 years, and come up the next day and find out, gee whiz, you know, we've got surges, and these surges are flooding major areas, subway systems, lower Manhattan, knocking out electricity. This is, I'm not talking about a hurricane now. I'm just talking about the ocean rising, so when the tide comes in at night, it comes in so far that it starts getting into the aquifers, polluting our drinking water, destroying crops because of the salination. So we had better get busy doing something individually if our government refuses to do it in a formal way. And right now, the government's doing nothing. That's that. Now, separately, this is from an Orthodox doctor. This was published in the British Medical Journal. This is from Dr. Alan Cunningham, pediatrician. Quote, tightening the rules for non-medical exemptions is not justifiable, will increase parental mistrust and resistance. Since my medical career began in 1962, I've seen the harmful effects of nearly all the vaccine-preventable diseases on the immunization schedule. I've enthusiastically administered many thousands of vaccine doses, and I'm glad that my children and grandchildren are well vaccinated. However, the current attitudes of public health officials about vaccine mandates and exemptions are arrogant and patronizing. In the U.S., all 50 states and the District of Columbia require children and adolescents to be vaccinated before they attend school, college, or preschool. Rhode Island has the most extensive requirements, including mandates for vaccination against hepatitis A, B, hemophilus influenza, type B, rotavirus, human papillomavirus, influenza. Medical exemptions are granted in all jurisdictions, and religious exemptions are granted everywhere but Mississippi and West Virginia. Only 20 states grant personal exemptions. The recent U.S. measles outbreak has given rise to a lot of media hyperventilation over vaccine exemptions, and there have been calls for outright bans, and he goes on to talk about that. Okay, here's a pro-vaccine advocate who believes that all these vaccines are important, yet he doesn't want to see it mandated. All right? Now, I'm going to share something that's different because I'm looking at the actual science, because it's clear that none of these people or the pro-vaccine advocates have actually looked at the science that would disprove their position. And that's a big oversight. And This is from Roman Bistrinic. I will quote it verbatim, and we have posted this on our website. Here's what he says. And mind you, Roman does some of the best scholarship and research of anyone I know of. And he is the one who brought forward all these graphs from public health agencies for over 180 years showing that the vaccines did nothing to stop the diseases at all, but rather cleaning up our water supply, pasteurizing milk, giving people better nutrition, putting better sanitation in place. That's what caused it. Your plumber did more than any doctor in eradicating communicable diseases. And that was never given credit, and it should. Here's what he has to say. Fear, it's a natural and primary and primal human emotion. And while human instinct is exceptional in evaluating and reacting to a natural personal risk, as in facing a predator, humans are terrible at assessing modern risks, according to Psychology Today. This is because our ancestors were programmed to quickly react and respond to a situation before it is even consciously perceived. Our reactions aren't based on logic and statistics, but in lightning-fast primitive responses. Threats such as a venomous spider and snake cause an out of proportion fear compared with a more likely threat of being killed in a car crash. For example, the low risk of being killed in a shark attack and evokes more terror than the much more likelihood of dying from a prescription drug. Spider and snake bites kill approximately 13 people a year. A shark attack kills one person every 2 years, but 32,719 deaths from motor vehicle crashes. 38,329 people die from a drug overdose. Infectious disease fall into this emotional, fear-based, primal mental algorithm. This reaction is completely understandable with mankind's horrifying historical experience with deadly microbes. The Black Plague decimated 30 to 60% of Europe's total population in the mid-1300s. A number of cholera pandemics during the 1800s killed millions. Typhus killed 3 million people in Russia during the early 1900s. And the list goes on. Historically, infectious diseases killed massive numbers of people. Typhus, typhoid, cholera, dysentery, smallpox, scarlet fever, whooping cough, diphtheria, tuberculosis, measles, and others were responsible for multi-millions of deaths in the Western world over many centuries. So with the recent spate of measles cases in the United States, the enormous amount of fear and anger comes as no surprise. People who have chosen not to vaccinate for a variety of reasons have been viciously disparaged. There have been calls to jail people that don't vaccinate. And by the way, shame on the Nation magazine and the entire Clinton left, which is most of the Democrats in the United States, for supporting attacking the anti-vaccine movement and the mothers. Because if you extend it, what you're also doing is you're attacking people who've chosen, by becoming educated on a topic, to not do something. And hence, the people who have the highest rate of not vaccinating are scientists with the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. These are PhDs and advanced degrees, parents who do their homework. You're not going to sell them something. They're going to want to buy something based upon what they believe in, and their beliefs are based upon their research. They're critical thinkers. So isn't it interesting that the most critical thinking adults, especially women in the United States when it comes to the care of their children, are the ones who are saying, hold on a second, the science does not support what you're asking me to do. And hence we attack them as if they are just a mindless mob of people who are caught up in the anti-vaccine hysteria. To the contrary, the mob that's caught up in the pro-vaccine is putting their children at risk, and only after the children are injured or die do they then become advocates, because every one of the people who are now members, the multi-millions of people who are members of these anti-vax groups, all were pro-vaccine. So explain the irony Nation magazine. You've got a couple highly literate people still around who are still under 104. Why don't you actually get these people together and say, are you really pro-women? Are you? Are you sure about that? Not just a political slogan, not just, but you really are. Then why are you not encouraging women to do their homework, detailed homework, and not listen to you or the media that are coming with your opinions, but not based upon scientific research, and see what the independent research shows? It shows that no woman who's properly educated on the subject of vaccines would willingly give her child 70 different vaccines with the assumption that they're safe and effective when the known ingredients in the toxicological literature, such as mercury and polysorbate 80 and formaldehyde and aluminum, are all proven by thousands of experiments, thousands in the toxicological literature to be neurotoxic. And yet they will say, well, they're irresponsible. No, it is not the anti-vax people who are irresponsible. It is the pro-vax people who are irresponsible, because they're the ones who are not allowing a person a freedom of choice. That is not democracy in action. That's fascism in action. And that's unfortunate. So there has been nothing short of a panic over the relatively small number of cases. It has also incited a raging fear that has been fanned by numerous incendiary media reports. Even Jimmy Kimmel was juiced on it and ridiculed anyone that questioned vaccines. But now let's do something that the media is not willing to do, and certainly not Mother Jones of the Nation. Why don't you try for 1 hour, 1 hour, to be truly objective on something you know nothing about? It's true that during the 1800s and even into the early 1900s, measles was a big killer. That is indisputable. In fact, all infectious diseases were the leading cause of death. Whooping cough, scarlet fever, tuberculosis, and others already mentioned killed millions. How deadly these diseases were is often emphasized. The implication is that without vaccines, we would return to those dark and deadly times. Massive deadly plagues would all return, and the advances we made because vaccines would all be wiped out. However, looking at mortality records, just take a moment. Don't listen to the Paul Offits. Don't listen to the CDC. Don't listen to the propagandist. Look at the actual mortality records. They are available. They're not hidden. There is something that is never mentioned. The death rate from all, let me underline, all infectious disease has plummeted before the introduction of vaccines for all those diseases. For example, in the United States, the mortality rate, the death rate for measles, decreased by over 98% before the introduction of the measles vaccine in 1963. 98% gone. In England, we see the same thing, a dramatic decrease in deaths from the introduction of the measles vaccine in 1968. 99% gone. The same can be said for other infectious diseases like whooping cough. Massive declines in death before the introduction of any vaccine. Scarlet fever, which was during the 1800s a bigger killer than whooping cough or measles, went on to zero. Oh, by the way, and they never had a vaccine, ever. Not one. For scarlet fever. Well, then, how is it you went from a bigger killer of whooping cough and measles combined to zero with no vaccine? And before the advent of a measles vaccine, measles was generally considered a mild illness. Even the British Medical Journal remarked in 1959 at this particular medical practice that over a 10-year span, there were very few complications from measles and that all children recovered. Underline, all children recovered. In the majority of children, the whole episode has been well and truly over, quote, a week. In this practice, measles is considered as relatively mild and inevitable childhood ailment that has at its best encountered any time between 3 and 7 years of age. Over the next 10 years, there have been few serious complications at any age, and all children have made complete recoveries. As a result of this reasoning, no special attempts have been made at prevention, even in young infants to whom the disease has not been found to be especially serious, end quote. That's the British Medical Journal. Things were dramatically better before 1963 and the introduction of the first measles vaccine. In fact, If we look at all causes of death from the United States Vital Statistics in 1962, we see that measles accounted for, are you ready for this? 0.02% of deaths that year. In 1962, measles was sixth from the bottom for causes of death. And you can look through the list of causes of death and find almost everything from birth injuries to 28,199, to ulcers, 12,228, to asthma, 4,896, were far higher than 408 deaths attributed to measles that year. Even if there was never a measles vaccine invented in the first place, would we be experiencing deaths on a massive scale as if this were the 1800s or early 1900s? Not likely. In fact, if we look at the exponential trend line based upon 50 years of data, good scientific data, the death rate would have been more likely to continue to drop. We can see the same thing in England. The trend shows a decreasing death rate that would have continued after the introduction of the vaccine anyway. It's not, as you may have believed, that there was death and chaos before the introduction of the vaccines on a massive scale, and suddenly as if a magic wand was waved and all lived happily ever after. In reality, most of the advances came over many decades of improvement in hygiene that I mentioned earlier, and sanitation and electricity and transportation of food and refrigeration and labor laws and nutrition. I mean, how can you compare a kid in 1880 that dies of a measles or whooping cough who was going to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and was 10 years old and working in terrible conditions in the mines in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Tennessee, or in England? You can't, not with a 10-year-old today. That kid would have had a short life expectancy no matter what, because they were worked to death. Did we forget that? Seems so. Seems like we never had a problem involving the contamination of milk, or the contamination of water, or the contamination of food, or the lack of refrigeration. Oh, yeah, we did. And that's why the life expectancy was so short. So for the people to be stating unequivocally of how great, you know, the vaccines were, and to deny and leave out of the equation and not look at the larger picture and the context in which we have evolved, that is fraud. That is scientific dishonesty. That is manipulation. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't deaths because of measles in 1962. There were, but they were very rare. For instance, in the six New England states, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, there were just 16 deaths attributed to measles. Some states had zero that year. It just wasn't as huge a problem as you might think today with all the rage and panic and the medical McCarthyism. Isn't it ironic? The Nation magazine, Mother Jones, and Daily Cause, they're leading the new McCarthyism. It's medical McCarthyism. So much for those that were considered once the bright lights of freedom now are just raging voices for Big Pharma, even without feeling they are complicit. Well, back in 1962, we didn't have the detailed statistics on causes of death we have today. The National Safety Council now accumulates causes of death from being struck by lightning to falling out of a building to drowning. If we compare the 1962 odds of dying from measles, 1 in 457,000, it falls between voices for Big Pharma, even without feeling they are complicit. Well, back in 1962, we didn't have the detailed statistics on causes of death we have today. The National Safety Council now accumulates causes of death from being struck by lightning to falling out of a building to drowning. If we compare the 1962 odds of dying from measles, 1 in 457,000, it falls between drowning in a swimming pool, 1 in 486,000, and a fall involving a bed, a chair, or furniture, 1 in 424,000. We can gain a little perspective on the risk if we had no measles vaccine program at all. As with other Western countries, the mortality rate from measles had greatly declined in France before the vaccine became available in 1966, yet after its introduction, vaccine rates remained low. In 1983, the vaccine rate was 20%. And in that year, there were 20 deaths attributed to the measles out of a population of 54 million. So that rate is 0.037 per 100,000, or approximately 1 out of every 2.7 million people. That's 1 out of every 2.7 million. By 1989, the vaccine rate was still less than 40%. In that year, there were 3 deaths attributable to measles. That means that 1 out of every 19 million people died of measles. Again, put this in perspective by comparing it to a National Safety Council statistics. You are more than 300% more likely to be killed by being hit by lightning than dying from measles in France in 1989, when the vaccine rate was well below what would be considered sufficient for herd immunity. Quote, "Majorities are never proof of the truth," Dr. Walter Hedwin, 1896. Now, there is the second part of this that I will hold for our next program, which deals with natural immunity, breastfeeding, having a disease and being able to overcome it, as we did with chickenpox and mumps and measles, something that our parents didn't fear. But today, no, we're basing our decisions upon unmitigated fear, and the pharmaceutical companies play this. They send forth their fearmongers, and whether it's a journalist for a liberal publication or a conservative publication, doesn't matter. The marching orders are the same. Whip people into a frenzy so when we pass laws that give them no opportunity for any exemption, religious or any others, then we've got a captive market. Once you get all the children in, then these people are so mind stupid that you can then do it for adults and they'll line right up. Tomorrow, every Walmart in America would be packed if you said, come and get your 75 to 257 different vaccines to show you're a good American. You would not have enough people there or enough needles to stick in people's arms. So much for an enlightened electorate. I'm Gary Knoll. Let us now listen to a few words of wisdom from some people who went on a journey. Never met them before, didn't know who they were. One of them came in incognito. I want to hear what they had to say. This is at a recent retreat that just ended.
Hi, my name is Mumtaz Ibrahim. I have been here 2 weeks. I have never in my whole life been to a place which is so wonderful. I've been a flight attendant in the past and I've traveled the whole world, but I've never seen this much kindness, love. Oh my God, I don't have the words to describe it. We are so pleased. My cousin came from South Africa and she's doing so well. I don't know, I'm going to cry now. This has been so wonderful. The gardens here are beautiful. I mean, there's lots of flowers. They take care of their yard. There's massage therapy here. There's a pool you can get into. There's exercise. There's nothing lacking here. So we're really, really thrilled and very thankful to Gary and Luann. They have taken such good care of us. I would recommend this to everybody. Everybody. I have never had a vacation like this before. This has just been wonderful. And thank you, Gary. Yeah, my cousin has end-stage multiple sclerosis. She has tried everything in the last... She's had it for 23 years. And last 13 years, she's been trying everything natural. She had stem cell therapy. She's had laser therapy. I mean, I don't know, countless of therapies. And she's has not seen as much difference as she has seen such a short while. So we are very excited for her. And I feel she's going to be walking out of here really happy and healthy. I mean, you can't get over multiple sclerosis overnight, so, but she's doing so well, and we are just absolutely thrilled. And I'm so happy that She took the time to fly 19 hours to get here, so it's well worth it. It was very fruitful, and we are hoping better things for her. And thank you, Gary. It's been wonderful.
I was very surprised when I got here that there was so much unity of the people thinking the same way in the positive manner. I've taken classes on positively thinking, and this is beyond that. It's really great. I came here, of course, with I'm diabetic, and I've gotten very good treatment here, good advice. Things are turning around for me. I'm getting stronger. My legs are almost dead when I got here. Very tired legs. Today, I can walk 2 miles, and that's very unusual for me. I only used to take my dogs out at night for one block, had to turn around, come home. I just couldn't walk any further. Now, I can do wonders. Of course, I have a heart condition, and I've been taking treatments for that. And I have no problems. I really have no problems. The biggest thing I'm going to take away from here is the lectures. The food, my wife already has started with the vegan diets and so on and so forth. And they're wonderful. They're great. I'm going to miss the people very, very much. But I have a lot of things to talk over with my wife, things I've experienced here, and good experiences. But the point is that the lectures, their learning process, the facts that are given to us and the proof behind the facts. I mean, I never knew things were happening this way in the world today. Here, in politics, in religion, whatever the case is. It's just, you have a problem with, you want to know something about something out in the world, about where you, that's part of your world as well. You come here, you can ask that question, you get an answer. It is truly amazing, especially, you know, I'm into politics. I'm not a politician, but I like to see, view the news and all the politicians and who's going to win, who's going to lose, and why and where. But I'm amazed at some of these. Some are worse than others, but there is no, as I've learned, and I put my own label on it, I can't depend on anybody, any politician, for example, but myself and what I know to be true. And I'm finding out more facts and figures here. And that's what I'll be taking away from here from all these different talks that we've had. It's just wonderful. And I really appreciate that. And I want to thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Knoll, for the opportunity to come here and get to know
you. That gentleman is 85 years of age, and when he was sent there by his sons, and one of his sons is my in-house counsel, my lawyer, they didn't expect him to be alive. He had multiple conditions. And he's on multiple medications, 15 different medications. Already we've been able to get his blood sugar down, his pulse rate down, his blood pressure down, and all with diet and lifestyle modification. We don't treat anything. It's just helping people. Now, on our next program, you'll hear from the woman herself, the woman you just heard from South Africa. They're Indian. She is the cousin, and she came to assist this woman. But I want you to hear her story, because she came with end-stage multiple sclerosis, very little time to live, in a wheelchair, knees couldn't bend. In fact, when we went to dinner, her room from the dinner area was only about 100 feet. It took her 37 minutes, because each step she had, Charles Joyce, one of the people who were there on staff, had to lift her foot and set it down, then go over and lift the other foot and set it down, the left, back and back, back and forth. And she had to stop about 10 times during that little place, and I want you to hear what happened at the end of 2 weeks, okay? to hear what is possible in this world when people get the right attitude. And remember, there are five keys for positive change. Being in the right place at the right time, with the right support people in your life, having the right ideas of what you want to do, and being the right person to do it. When all that's together, something happens, you have this gestalt, this epiphany, everything turns into the right direction. It's like a key, all the chambers click and the door opens. What you do with that is your business, but at least that's how this door opens rather than just knocking against the door and it never opens. So that's just some of the things that happened, and this was all to help in support of our sister station, New York WBI, and we were able to raise thousands upon thousands of dollars for the station. But I want to thank the 20 professional people who came from all over the world to help in this journey of helping the station and helping the people who are there to have healthier, happier lives. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.